Hello and welcome to the Majlis, Ready for Your Pre-Liberties Current Affairs podcast focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, the host of the Majlis podcast and Ready for Your Pre-Liberties media manager here in Washington, D.C. There are only 2 weeks to go before schools open, and Turkmenistan must be one of few countries where academic year set to begin without many changes despite the fear of global COVID-19 pandemic. One reason why it is the case could be because the Turkmen authorities say the virus doesn't exist in the country, but every time we revisit this topic on the Majlis podcast, we come across with new evidences to the contrary and more reasons to believe that something is terribly going wrong out there. The urgency couldn't be more evident than World Health Organization's repeated calls to Turkmen authorities to make its COVID-19 related situation more transparent and allow the agency officials to revisit the country. To discuss all these today on the Majlis podcast, I'm joined by Rachel Denberg, Human Rights Watch's Deputy Director for Europe and Central Asia, Ruslan Matiev, the Director of Alternative Turkmenistan News, Farouk Yusupi, the Director of Ready for Your Pre-Liberties Turkmen Service, and Bruce Panier, the Editor of Ready for Your Pre-Liberties Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. Thank you, colleagues, for joining us on this very important conversation today. So let's start with you, Farouk, and the latest news from your shop is the development in which nearly 20 students test positive for COVID-19 only in Lebap province. More details, please.
Yes, this was only in Lebap province where students want to go back to their universities in the capital, Ashgabat. And before allowing them to go back to Ashgabat, they were required to do the tests. And in the first 2 days of the testing, there were 21 students who tested positive, and they were taken under quarantine right away. And what we hear from Turkmenistan, namely from a source in the Ministry of Health, yes, the authorities are preparing to reopen the schools, and those tests are being done for the university students across the country in all the regions before they can go. And they are also planning, after that, planning to test school students. But how they're going to do it,
So, Farouk, what does that mean? What does that mean? They are going to test school students after. After they start school?
After they finish with the university schools. Again, I have to say that I am just speculating why students, university students, I think that's because Turkmenistan is also preparing to celebrate country's Independence Day in September, end of September. Mm. And for those celebrations, they need university students. That's why they were given the priority. I mean, that's my guess, again. And correspondents on the ground, like from Lebap, especially Mari and Balkan regions, they're saying that situation is not improving, but it's rather worsening, and all of the medical institutions are now overcrowded with COVID-19 patients, which authorities, of course, say they are not COVID, but all of those patients are showing COVID-19 mm. symptoms, and mm. the death rate hasn't been flattened out, according to the source in the Ministry of Health. So the situation does not provide for reopening of the schools or for mass celebrations, but it seems like for the government pretending that everything is fine in Turkmenistan is the priority.
Okay, Ruslan, I am particularly interested in the situation in Dashoghuz province, which is perhaps one of the least developed provinces in the country. So what is the situation there? What kind of news are you getting in terms of the COVID-19?
Indeed, the news from Dashoghuz region are not promising. There is one particular region, Kunyaurgench region, on the north of the region of Dashoghuz Velayat. There, they say, is one of the hot spots, basically, with several known already doctors who have died from COVID-19. Of course, the authorities don't acknowledge it, don't recognize it was COVID. They in the death certificates, they indicate anything but COVID, but coronavirus. So the news coming from there is quite alarming, especially from the Kunyaurgench region. From Göroğlu district, it's more or less calm. I haven't been receiving any numbers of information or numbers of cases of deaths of people from COVID-19, but Kunyor Genç stands apart.
Ruslan, as we said, Dashoghuz being one of the least developed provinces in Turkmenistan, so what is the health capacity there to respond into this the spread of pandemic there?
Well, the healthcare capacity overall in Turkmenistan is quite bad, actually.
Right.
We shouldn't be separating Dashoghuz here, but of course, all of the state-of-the-art clinics are located in the capital, in Ashgabat. Dashoghuz, just like Lebap, just like Mari or Balkan region, is where healthcare system is underdeveloped. And the health capacities, of course, the Dashoghuz region borders with Karakalpakistan, the area that is most affected by the RLC disaster, and the quality of drinking water in Dashoghuz is bad, the air is bad, so all of this makes it even worse, basically.
Right. Farooq, the news report from Lebap province about dozens of students being tested positive is just one among various signs that the virus not only exists in the country, but it's penetrating, it's affecting people. So earlier, I think I have seen reports about overwhelmed hospital capacity, I think in one of your reports. Most of those stories are obviously leaking out and are anecdotal. But there is nothing more reliable than eyewitness accounts. So tell us, please, about how the hospitals, the health system, is coping with the situation in the rest of the country.
Throughout the country, the doctors are very unhappy. They are literally being forced to go into those so-called quarantine zones, or the medical institutions where they are setting up the quarantine. But according to our correspondents, there is a lack of doctors and nurses. And in one case, from a correspondent from Ashgabat reported that the kindergarten nurses, what they call kindergarten nannies, they're not trained nurses, nannies rather, were sent to help those quarantine zones for 14 days. Of course, there is no even discussion of rewarding doctors and nurses who go treat the COVID-19 patients. But in those cases when they say that they would rather not go, they're being threatened by criminal cases on treason charges as a deserter, like from military, and they're being forced. Well, we had a report last week from Lebap saying that the elderly medical personnel were allowed to choose not to go to those quarantine zones because they are those who are most vulnerable. That happened after a number of medical elderly doctors and nurses died of COVID-19 in Lebap, Mari, Balkanabad, and in Ashgabat. So that's one of the, let's say, the easing on the part of the authorities, but still they don't know how to treat because so far they haven't adopted any protocols of treating COVID-19 patients because as we know, they cannot accept any international expertise because officially COVID-19 doesn't exist in Turkmenistan.
Right.
So that's the point. And on the other part, medical supplies and medications are in great shortage in Turkmenistan.
Yeah, in great shortage in, even in normal days in Turkmenistan, let alone the situation with the COVID. Rachel, it's painful to see the way the authorities are behaving. But one area which we are almost certain but have no information about is prisons. The Turkmen jails are the worst place to be, even in the normal situation. So what are your main concerns as Turkmenistan is facing this pandemic?
Really pleased to be on this panel. It is such an urgent topic that we're discussing today. Well, obviously, we have concerns about the spread of the pandemic in places of detention because places of detention are, well, they're notorious incubators of disease even in some of the best of circumstances, let alone in Turkmenistan, where tuberculosis is rife, and there have been reports of, you know, people not getting to their tuberculosis medications because of the lockdown, because of the quarantine. So obviously we're concerned about possible spread of COVID-19 in places of custody, and also the worsening of health conditions in already poor circumstances because of a lockdown in places of custody. But I don't know if this is when you'd like me to expand on how every single thing that Farouk and that Ruslan have said, every point is a point of violation of Turkmenistan's obligations, and I can just go through it. It's not just that it's outrageous what the government's response is. It's just blatantly violative of Turkmenistan's obligations to uphold the right to health. And I can go into that now, or I can
go ahead, Rachel.
Well, first and foremost, the fact that they're still denying the presence of the disease in Turkmenistan is recklessly denying the presence of the disease. Not only is it just not credible, but that's one of the frontline violations of the right to health, because under the right to health, the government has an obligation to provide accurate, up-to-date, fact-based information about the virus, so that people, because that is the first step you can do to protect yourself, is to have information about the virus, about access to services. So that's just for starters. And then Turkmenistan has as an obligation under its under international law to uphold, you know, the highest possible standard of health in all facilities. So this inequality, the parlous state of health facilities, except for the most elite ones, is already a serious problem, because it, you know, even if the government is in economic crisis, it means that they still have that does not reduce its obligations to provide the highest standard of health, a progressively high standard of health, and it's clearly not doing that. Mm-hmm. And there's clearly inequalities in terms of access to health. And then third, I think both Ruslan and Fouh were how they were describing what's happening to healthcare workers. It's a flagrant violation of government's obligations to minimize risks of occupational accidents and diseases by ensuring that workers, have information, adequate protective clothing. We didn't talk about personal protective equipment in healthcare facilities, but we know from the factual reporting that Ruslan and the Turkmen News and that Azatlik and other sources have provided about how hospital and healthcare facility workers are expected to purchase their own personal protective equipment. When healthcare workers can't protect themselves, already that's a violation of government obligations. These items should be provided free of charge. But then they also put other people's health at risk, and healthcare facilities become vectors of transmission of the virus. Also, there are WHO guidance notes on the rights and roles and responsibilities of healthcare workers that also confirm the extensive equipment that they have the right to have, and that they should. It is absolutely a violation to force healthcare workers to serve in these facilities, and we haven't even gotten. I mean, there are other problems that are absolute violations in terms of how healthcare workers are treated, but I'll stop here.
Yeah, Rachel, thank you very much. I'm sure we are going to talk about that. On one hand, while Turkmenistan is in denial about it and in violation of, all of its obligations, what the international community is doing or what can they do? And this is another topic I would like to dwell on a little bit later. But first, let me bring in Bruce here. Bruce, it's interesting to hear that on one hand, the authorities are in denial about the virus, but on the other hand, they are also testing people for coronavirus. What's the logic here?
Logic? Yeah, that doesn't fit with Turkmenistan too well most of the time. I suppose there's two things. One, they have to show that they're trying to see if it really exists. They say it doesn't, but they at least have to do the testing. It's a global problem, and so to be able to say that we don't have it, they have to say that we're testing, and so that's how we know that we don't have it. But I would say probably a more legitimate reason is because the select few in the government do need to know who has it, how much, and where, because in the end, they're probably more interested in keeping themselves from getting it than anyone else. So they're just making sure that, as we see, that they're placing travel restrictions, you know, for moving around the country. It's pretty obvious they don't want it to get to the capital, right? Because that's where they are. Mm-hmm. You know, I would say, I mean, what one would say, because that's where most of the population is, but I think it's more likely that that's where the officials are. And so they want to track this as much as they can and make sure that it doesn't come and get into their households.
Right.
But those are the second thing.
Farouk, talking of testing, and is it also taking place some in other places? Like, you know, we spoke about the Libab.
Yeah. It is taking place in all the regions, including in Ashgabat. That was confirmed by the source in the Ministry of Health. But from other regions, we were not able to get enough information, or either we are not reporting in order to protect our sources and our reporters. I can also say that yesterday there was a cargo plane that arrived from Istanbul, first to Turkmenabad, and then it flew to Ashgabat. And according to our source in the Turkmenabad airport, some of that cargo were the testing kits.
Yeah, that was, I was wondering about. I mean, we receive this anecdotal examples of testing, but what's the capacity, the testing capacity of Turkmenistan? How much reliable is that? I mean, since they are not getting outside.
I don't know how capable Turkmen medical staff is to identify COVID. Probably it's not a rocket science, but we are hearing that those who get tested in, for example, in one case in Ashgabat, a woman came to, because she had COVID-19 symptoms, and she came to this former Polymex company's building where they set up the quarantine center to be hospitalized there. And they refused to hospitalize her. They told her that her results were negative. And then she went to another clinic where she had her x-ray on the lungs, and 70% of one side of the lungs was gone already. So what people are telling, the authorities are not telling us the truth, those who went through tests, because they are preparing for the next WHO mission. And there are other signs too. They already, our sources are telling, the source in the Ministry of Health, telling that they are preparing new places for COVID-19 patients to be moved away from those known centers and medical facilities that they want to show to the coming WHO mission. So I don't have very high hopes for the next WHO mission.
We are going to talk about that. Certainly there are lots of questions about WHO's visit or impending visit, and what they can and what they should do. On testing though, Ruslan, you are following this situation. How easy it is for an individual to go and take a test? I mean, it's been mess throughout the world, just not to single out Turkmenistan here. But as we speak, what's the procedure for taking a test?
Well, first of all, I should say that getting a test in Turkmenistan is not easy. I think a week and a half ago, we reported about a case when one of Ashgabat residents wanted to, the person had symptoms, and the person wanted to be tested. He turned first to his polyclinic, then from there he was referred to another clinic, from that clinic to another clinic, and it was like four or five steps until the person was told that you should go to your own region and get tested there. So the number of tests, it seems, is quite low. Turkmenistan does not have the capacity to satisfy all those people who want to be tested with the tests. They cannot provide all the tests. The latest news that I heard is that it costs, if a person has a health insurance, then it costs about 100 manats, which is slightly over $4 if we take a black market rate. And this way people can get this. Of course, just like with anything in Turkmenistan, this procedure also involves your acquaintances among the higher ups, right, among government officials, among law enforcement. You know, just one phone call from such departments, like I don't know, presidential administration or the Ministry of National Security or police or the prosecutor's office, would get things done. There was a situation when a person was basically turned away from a clinic and said that no tests were available. Within like a quarter of an hour, the clinic received a phone call, and all of a sudden the test was found. And this person received it and was actually tested positive, I should say.
Wow.
So they do record positive results, positive tests, yet they don't report them. We also mentioned, we also talked about WHO. I think their second visit to Turkmenistan would be different than the first visit. During the first visit, they basically studied the capacities of the Turkmen healthcare system. Now they simply want to take samples and take them to Geneva, elsewhere in the world, and test them independently in their own laboratories.
Right.
Which is good.
Yeah, yeah. Which is good. Definitely. We are going to talk about that a little bit later on that. I mean, just one more testing, Farouk. I know you want to say something, but just one more thing on the testing, though. These information are leaking out from the country, although authorities don't like to report it, but it's leaking out. And of course, Farouk, you are receiving lots of leaked information, and you referred to a couple of people in the health ministry and other places. And Ruslan, you might be receiving similar leaks too. But it also shows to me that people are in the country increasingly concerned, increasingly not comfortable the way the authorities are dealing with this situation. So what, I don't know whether you have a kind of a channel of communication to talk to them. I mean, why they are reporting these, why they are leaking those reports, what do they say?
If I can step in here, and because I really need to go, and we discussed this with Muhammad, I'm very sorry for that. I can say that the level of dissatisfaction among the population in Turkmenistan has increased, has gone up. If previously, let's say a year ago or 2 years ago, if one would start a conversation on a political topic, others would slowly put it down, stop the conversation. Now they pick it up and they are quite loud. They are not being polite. They're not being diplomatic. They say what they feel, because this situation indeed has shown to everybody in Turkmenistan that the government, A, is not capable of protecting their own citizens, B, is hiding information, is lying, basically lying to the WHO, lying to its own citizens, and C, I don't know, there is no future with this regime, with this government.
Thank you very much, Ruslan. Farouk, if you want to say something very quickly, otherwise I will take a break here.
Yeah, I just wanted to add to what Ruslan said about testing. I can attest that it's not easy to get the test. I mean, they only do the test when people come to hospitalize to hospital. In the beginning, they were doing the test only for the officials, and they were saving those testing kits for the people who were planned to see president, to meet with president, like during his visits to regions and like wherever. So they were saving the tests. And just on the eve of the first WHO mission, beginning of July, that same source in the Ministry of Health told me that only 140 or 180 tests were done in Ashgabat daily. So, I mean, you can see how scarce it is. But they are bringing, with the cargo yesterday, they brought, apparently, reportedly, they brought some more testing kits.
Right. But whatever the Turkmen authorities are saying, the international community is not buying it. And in recent days, as we already hinted, we have seen statements from the World Health Organization urging the authorities to allow the agency officials to revisit the country. We have also seen tweets by the officials of the same agency urging Turkmenistan to make COVID-19-related developments more transparent. So it looks like the Turkmen president agreed for the revisit of the agency officials, but God knows when that will happen. And when it does, what level of independence will they have to reach to a decisive conclusion? But these are some of the critical questions that remain to be answered. So, meanwhile, concerns are growing about the situation of COVID-19 in the country and authorities' mishandling of it. So let's continue the Majlis podcast discussing these and many other questions very shortly. first, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis podcast. I'm joined by Rachel Denberg, Human Rights Watch's Deputy Director for Europe and Central Asia, Ruslan Miatiev, the Director of Alternative Turkmenistan News, Farouk Yusufi, the Director of Radio Free Europe Radio Liberties Turkmen Service, Bruce Panier, the Editor of Radio Free Europe Radio Liberties Central Asia Blog, Kishlak Owazi. I'm Mohamed Tahir, Radio Free Europe Radio Liberties Media Manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C. We are discussing Turkmenistan and the coronavirus. I have lots of questions to Bruce and Rachel in this section, but to start with Farouk, though. Farouk, authorities are not saying anything in public in the context of COVID-19, and also media is silent, I guess. Are they also silent about what the pandemic is doing to the world?
Yes. I mean, there are no reports whatsoever. If you look at the official media, no reports about what's going on in the world in the context of coronavirus. But whenever they please to talk about coronavirus, It's, of course, something happening outside. But those reports are very rare. Only the semi-official, the so-called quasi-independent media like Orient or Arzu News, they do provide some reporting about coronavirus outside in the outside world, but those are quite rare, I would say.
Okay, Bruce, so why the authorities in Turkmenistan are doing this, I mean, the way they are behaving? Could it be because, I'm totally speculating here, could it be because they have said once that they don't have it and they don't like to be proven wrong? And with that, digging themselves into a hole and they don't know how to get out of the situation?
Yeah, you look at the history of Turkmenistan and the government, you know, Berdimuhamedov, actually, probably even Niyazov. Once they say something, they never come back and say, oh, okay, the situation changed, and certainly not, oh, I made a mistake. That just doesn't happen. You know, they like to portray themselves as being this unique country in whatever way they possibly can. You know, they said they were sane when, as this virus was spreading, they kept saying, we don't have it. And like I said, it's no shame to admit that you have it because everyone else does. But for some, I guess, out of habit, they had said that they didn't have it. And that was their story. And unfortunately, they just stick to their story right now. So.
It looks, you know, as we discussed, the World Health Organization is not comfortable the way things are in Turkmenistan, and they want to go back there. We have been talking about this earlier. So, Bruce, tell us a little bit more about what is going on here. Now, it looks like, according to tweets by the agency official, that President has agreed for the second visit. Is it the case?
Yeah, absolutely. That's, you know, according to Hans Kluge, who's been doing most of the work, the connections with Turkmenistan, they had spoken with Berdimuhamedov and he had agreed. And then they had a follow-up conversation with Foreign Minister Rashid Meredov. He also agreed. You know, as you pointed out, that doesn't mean they're going to get there anytime soon necessarily. But I think what's significant about that is that the World Health Organization director was involved in the conversation with Berdimuhamedov. Now, you know, this guy has all kinds of things to do, certainly right now. And I imagine he doesn't have contact with many leaders in some of these, you know, certainly not in a country like Turkmenistan, right? Okay, China's one thing, you know, some of these bigger countries, yes. But for him to actually participate in a conversation with Berdimuhamedov showed me that the WHO is taking this real seriously. They aren't satisfied with what they saw during the first visit, you know, in July. And he wanted to be on, you know, in on this conversation so he could make the point that we have to come back and we have to do this again, because we know the results of the first visit were just a disaster, you know, all the way around. I understand the World Health Organization's position. They're not weapons inspectors. They don't have helicopters at their disposal where they can arrive in a country and say, we're going to make a snap inspection of this facility. That's not the way they work. They have to agree to all these places and everything. But, you know, a lot of people said that them saying, in very cautious language, that we didn't see evidence of this virus there was basically validating the Turkmen government's story.
Yeah, that's something that it also puts the World Health Organization's own reputation at stake, right? I mean, they don't like to be part of Turkmenistan's cover-up.
Right.
Rachel, Rachel, what you can add into here? I mean, what the agency can do here? I mean, how it should approach Turkmenistan?
Well, I mean, just to say again that the World Health Organization, like Bruce said, doesn't have its own, like, sort of enforcement forces that can force their way into healthcare facilities. They can't operate the way weapons inspectors do, or even, I mean, and actually no international organization can operate in Turkmenistan, it's very difficult for them to operate in ways that would be in line with their own terms of reference. So, but I think for the World Health Organization, it must have also been a question about their own, about their reputation, because that it looked, even though the World Health Organization says that they don't exist to criticize governments, and I think you remember that from the very beginning of the pandemic. But there's quite a difference between, you know, criticizing governments and dancing around the facts in such an awkward way that you really damage, you risk serious damage to your reputation. I mean, you could see that they were really straining to find the right words to say, well, no, we didn't see it, but that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. So I think that they need to ensure that their reputation doesn't end up in tatters. And also, I have to hope that the World Health Organization also just deeply, you know, I hope cares about what's going to happen to this country, where the leadership is incompetent and is lying and is pursuing a reckless policy.
Right. Yeah, of course, Bruce, you had something to add into it. Feel free to add. And also, there are two things that the World Health Organization can draw a lesson once they are back in Turkmenistan. One is their own previous visit to the country. And there has to be a lesson that they should draw from when they go back to the country for a fact-finding mission. And also, the agency's role was criticized during the handling of the pandemic in Tajikistan in early days. And is there any lesson that they can also draw from there, from their dealing with the Tajikistan?
Well, first, the only point I wanted to make was that the World Health Organization has already come under a lot of criticism for their statements about China early on in the pandemic, where it was clear that they were just basically repeating what they'd heard from Chinese officials. So they've been burned once, but that was China, right? Mm. You know, China's a big country. You don't want to say, look, even a country like Turkmenistan can, pull the wool over their eyes, so to speak. As far as, what they learned from the first mission, you know, I'm with Ruslan. I think the first one was to try to figure out what exactly they were looking at. What was the possibility when they got in there to look around, you know, and what had they heard from officials? There's obviously internal memos going around now in the organization to let them know what to expect on the second one. So they're going to have refined this a little bit. I mean, I thought it was significant for one thing that those tweets from Hans Kluge that mentioned in-country testing, right? Hmm. So they wanted to carry out their own testing on site to look at some of this. So, you know, they have learned a lesson. And more generally, since you brought in Tajikistan, I think, you know, the World Health Organization works with all countries. And, you know, I did a lot of work with or looking over the joint external evaluation from Turkmenistan in 2016 that they did with the World Health Organization. So, of course, they work with all these countries and have a relationship, but they don't work with many of them during times of crisis. Hmm. And now they are. And now they're learning what it's like to have to deal with Tajikistan and Turkmenistan and, you know, and some of these the other countries in the region, and what kind of credibility they can expect and cooperation, really, from the governments. I mean, all of them say we're going to cooperate, and Turkmen government's like, yeah, we're happy to cooperate. But in fact, that's not the case. So I think this next visit will be a lot more. There'll be things, specific things that they're looking for that they know officials will not tell them or show them.
It all already looks, sounds like, I mean, they are asking something different than compared to their previous requests, right? I mean, in terms of the testing outside of the country, transparency, anything to dwell on that?
Yeah, well, you know, again, like, you know, it's already been mentioned that, one, they want to take samples out. So, Turkmenistan is supposed to make these available anyway under the rules of the WHO. They should have been sending samples to the International Laboratory for testing. Now, clearly they haven't been, because that was mentioned in the first visit at the end that they needed to do that. That was part of the agreement. Mm-hmm. So they're essentially sending a team to get the samples themselves and bring it out. Yeah. You know, now, whose samples they get, which samples they get, of course, that's a different question. But at least they're sending. Get it.
If I may jump in, yeah. I just want to express one opinion about WHO. I don't want to I'm not here to criticize WHO or other organizations, but WHO has been allowing Turkmenistan to use its relationship with the Berdimuhamedov government for propaganda purposes, like this Bicycle Day and the Health Day, International Health Day. They are used very widely in Turkmenistan as the expression of the genius of the president of Turkmenistan. And I think they could press a little bit the Turkmenistan government, saying that, I mean, we appreciate your relationship with us, but if you don't cooperate, these relationships don't mean anything. So they should be a little bit more outspoken rather than saying, oh, we are not here for criticizing the government. It's not about criticizing, it's about carrying out the mission. It is called the WHO mission, and WHO mission has to carry out the mission that they went for the first time and for the second time. If they continue to treat and appease the Berdimuhamedov government in that way, I don't think that they will allow them to see any real COVID-19 patient to get the sample from. It's going to be the same old story this time too.
Let's see in the mission yet to come. Ruslan, you are here?
I'm still here, yes.
Okay.
I have another thought on this.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this call with the director of WHO and the president of Turkmenistan would not have happened if the situation was in control of the government. It seems to me that situation is getting or is already out of control of the government. You remember the dust story, the infectious, whatever, dust carrying the virus. I mean, nobody believes this.
Ruslan, your voice cutting off. We don't hear you. Ruslan, are you with us? It appears that Ruslan is having some connection problems. God knows from which island he's joining us today. He was on vacation. So let's see. We also need to be wrapping up the discussion here. So moving forward, Rachel, yes, we certainly like to have Mr. Close join us in the discussion and to talk about what their findings were in case if they are able to go back to Turkmenistan this time. And we would like to give him a platform or the agency a platform to discuss their findings. To be fair, World Health Organization is just one agency that we have been focused. Is there any other actors, Rachel, who could play a role and they are not yet playing?
Well, I mean, the World Health Organization is the expert actor on COVID, on epidemiology. I mean, they're crucial here. There are other political actors who could try to mobilize political pressure on Turkmenistan to ensure that Turkmenistan abides by its obligations on the right to health but that's a very steep road to go up, to go up. Turkmenistan, as you know, has an atrocious record on human rights generally. But still, I mean, I think that there needs to be, I think the lesson with Turkmenistan is that nothing happens unless all actors act together and give the Turkmen government no place else to turn, so that they can't sort of forum shop and find the gentlest actor to talk to. So I think if there's going to be political pressure brought to bear on Turkmenistan to stop pressuring doctors or to increase testing, they need an authoritative an authoritative statement from the WHO, and then they need to mobilize political pressure completely.
So, I mean, this is the situation where we are in the country. So going forward, where your eyes will be going forward to determine where things are headed going forward in Turkmenistan in the context of COVID-19?
I can jump in. Turkmen government has to recognize that, I mean, they are not capable of dealing with any sort of epidemiologic crisis, let alone a pandemic. This kind of novel and unknown disease taking the form of a pandemic. So it has to just recognize, say that we cannot treat this kind of situation. And it's not only Turkmenistan that cannot deal with this kind of situation. We're seeing what's happening in the neighboring countries. So there is nothing to be ashamed of. And they have to start quickly. Otherwise, it's going to go as it goes, as it's going now. Like, it's going to infect more people, it's going to kill more people, and that will have a very dire consequences for the country, for the population, and for the economy, which is already suffering. So I think it's Turkmen government should get their act together sooner rather than later.
You know,
and as far as the international organizations, I know that, yes, I agree that WHO is the only organization that can act here, but there were some other actors too, like the U.S. Embassy in Turkmenistan. They were quite proactive when they put out those notes, travel restriction notes. They have been saying that officially there are no cases, but the government might be disinclined, so keep that in mind. And they put Turkmenistan in the highest category of no travel countries. So there were some actors, and I think if there would be more Western countries' embassies doing the same, that would put a little bit more pressure on the Turkmen government.
Yeah, Faruk, you kind of also brought us back to the same point. But also, I was wondering, when you were talking, if things gets out of control in Turkmenistan, the first countries out of Turkmenistan, the ones who will be affected is the region, the neighboring countries like Uzbekistan. And I guess whenever Mirziyoyev calls, Berdimuhamedov picks up the call, I guess. We often hear the news about the conversation taking place between these two countries. Maybe they are playing some role, but if
it
region
is, it
will
is
be
everyone. It is not only Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, and Iran.
Yeah, definitely.
Because there is always a movement between Turkmenistan and those neighboring countries.
Right,
so
right.
If Turkmenistan doesn't act and those countries just close the border because Turkmenistan is not acting, and they are, those countries, Iran and Uzbekistan, they are really trying to contain the spread. But
I guess the borders are already closed, isn't it?
Yeah, it is closed.
Yeah.
But I mean, in the future, once these countries hopefully will contain the spread of the virus, they will not want to deal and to have any movement with Turkmenistan if Turkmenistan is just choosing to ignore the problem.
Right, right. Okay, we were talking about the final thoughts here. I mean, I don't know if Ruslan is here or not. Bruce, let's start with you. So where your eyes will be going forward to determine where things are headed in Turkmenistan in the context of COVID-19?
Well, I'm going to be watching the next WHO visit to Turkmenistan and really carefully, you know, what their state, their assessment is at the very end of it. You know, and being the kind of organization they are, they might have already telegraphed the Turkmen government and told them that we're going to express serious doubts about this. I mean, they didn't, if you read between the lines, they kind of already did. But they might be, I would hope that if it's the same like the last visit, that they would be much, much clearer in their assessment and say, we don't think that we're getting the whole truth here.
Right.
And
right.
So there's a lot of questions. We're willing to say we didn't see it, but we didn't see enough. And so we can't say for sure whether they got it or not because they didn't show us all the things that they should have.
Thank you very much. And also, finally, Bruce and I will be out for the next 2 weeks. So with that, Majlis will also be taking a break, and we will return in the first week of September. So with that, thank you very much, Rachel Denberg, Human Rights Watch's Deputy Director for Europe and Central Asia, for your time and thoughts today. And also, big thanks goes to Ruslan Matiyev, the Director of Alternative Turkmenistan News. He was on and off with us today. And Faruk Yusufi, the Director of Arafirals Turkmen Service. And Bruce Panier, the Editor of Arafirals Central Asia Blog, Kishlok Awazi. Thank you very much, colleagues, for your time today.
Thank you.
This is from me, Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Liberties Media Manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C.